Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later this hour, while Barack Obama is on the front page for his speech yesterday, buried on page 15 of the New York Times today, is a little piece revealing that John McCain repeatedly got it wrong yesterday about a basic fact of the Iraq War. Who's on whose side? Whether Al-Qaeda and Iran are aligned, to be specific. So we will talk about that and what it means coming up later in the hour, and we will clear up, because a lot of people are confused, even if you didn't expect John McCain to be, about who's on whose side in Iraq and where Al-Qaeda finds its allies and where Iran finds its allies. So that's coming up later this hour. But let's get a particular reaction to Obama's speech. For the past 6 months, Eboo Patel has been traveling around the country promoting his new book, Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. He is executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps, a Chicago-based organization that looks to foster dialogue between young people of all religions. He joins us now to talk about how we talk about Islam, but also some of the parallels between what Obama was discussing yesterday and the kinds of work that Patel does with Chicagoans from a variety of backgrounds. So, Eboo Patel, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be back.
Now, by way of background for our listeners, you're from Chicago, you're Muslim, you work with young people. Tell us basically what your group does.
The Interfaith Youth Corps does two big things. Number one, talk religion respectfully. Number two, take interfaith action. We think that the discourse about religion in the world has been poisoned by extremists, been poisoned by bigots, been poisoned by people who think that religion can only inspire violence. And we're saying we need to be having a conversation about religion that brings people together, that focuses on shared values between different religions, and most importantly, how young people from different faiths can take action on those shared values. So, you know, at ifyc.org, people can see pictures and programs of our Days of Interfaith Youth Service, of our Fellows program, of our various curriculum, and we go to college campuses and religious communities all over the world, and we train people in how to talk about religion respectfully and how to take positive interfaith action.
So you must have been listening to Obama's speech, and we're going to play a few clips here for your reactions to some of the particulars and in search of parallels. You must have listened to that with particular interest.
Absolutely.
So here's one. Let's just play one clip and then we'll talk about it.
Given my background, my politics, and my professed values and ideals, there will no doubt be those for whom my statements of condemnation are not enough. Why associate myself with Reverend Wright in the first place, they may ask? Why not join another church? And I confess that if all that I knew of Reverend Wright were the snippets of those sermons that have run in an endless loop on the television sets and YouTube, if Trinity United Church of Christ conformed to the caricatures being peddled by some commentators, there is no doubt that I would react in much the same way.
I think that is the most important part of that paragraph is Barack Obama saying, if all I knew of Reverend Wright was this caricature, then I might think, I would have disowned him a long time ago. It's effectively what he said. This is how I experience being a Muslim in a lot of America right now. I will get up and I'll give a talk to 250 people about the tradition of tolerance in Islam, quoting from the Holy Quran. I will speak of some of our great Muslim scholars who are advancing that tradition, like Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf here in New York City. I'll speak about Muslim beauty in Rumi, and people will stand up and say, where are the moderate Muslims? And I want to say, well, you know, I've just spoken for 60 minutes, and you've pretended as if you haven't heard me. The problem, I think, is that the only thing that some people know about Islam is violence. And there are two problems with that. One problem is ignorance. I mean, you can't only know violence about a tradition of 1.3 billion people that's 1,400 years old. That is shockingly ignorant, if that's all you know about that. It's kind of like the only thing you know about America is the three-fifths clause in the Constitution, or the only thing you know about Thomas Jefferson is that he owned slaves, and you know nothing else. The second thing is that ignorance is very combustible in this world, because what any group of people seeks is respect and some type of appreciative knowledge of their tradition. So we need to fix this. We need to fix this. Muslims in the world need to know about the shared values they hold with America, and Americans need to know about the shared values they hold with Islam.
So like Obama being asked to denounce Reverend Wright, if all you're being asked as a Muslim is to denounce the extremes, then you feel misunderstood and disrespected.
What I want to say is, why is all that you know about Islam the extremes? Why does the conversation always start with, you know, denounce the violence in Islam? I mean, that's easy. Of course I denounce the violence in Islam. I would like people to know about the tradition of mercy in Islam, the tradition of pluralism in Islam, the tradition of service and compassion in Islam. This is what I write about in my book. This is what we do at the Interfaith Youth Corps. And this is why we say that the discourse on religion has been poisoned, because when the first question is a hateful question, the first question is a question entirely about negatives, you're off on the wrong foot.
Right. But you have to understand also where people are coming from, right? In this country where there are very few Muslims, that if the first contact that any Americans had with Islam was 9/11, and the fact that whoever the people were doing this said they did it in the name of Islam, then it's like, whoa. And that's where the conversation legitimately starts for them, no?
One of the wonderful things about not knowing about something is that you can actually learn about that thing. And that's why I wrote Acts of Faith, to articulate a Muslim journey in the world. That's why I recommend Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf's book, What's Right with Islam is What's Right with America, or Reza Aslan's book, or Zachary Karabell's book, because these are books that advance knowledge in this field. So I think that it's an entirely legitimate thing to say, my first brush with a tradition was, or with a group of people was negative, but it's not legitimate to then not seek additional types of knowledge about that group of people.
We can take phone calls for Eboo Patel at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's listen to another clip from Obama's speech yesterday, this specifically about Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community. I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me, a woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street, and who on more than one occasion has uttered racial or ethnic stereotypes that made me cringe.
So do moderate Muslims have the same sort of tension, and maybe within their own families?
I don't think moderate Muslims have that tension, but I think that any tradition has tensions between its compassionate dimensions and its extreme dimensions. So Islam has on one end of the continuum a figure like Rumi, who is so wide and so generous and so open and loving that he is one of the best-selling poets in America, because I think Rumi reminds Americans of Whitman. And we have on the other side this crazy, violent fanatic in Osama bin Laden. And what is very clear is that the vast majority of Muslims are in the middle, tending and inclining towards the compassion and mercy of Rumi. And if you want to know more about that, look at Dalia Mogahed and John Esposito's new book, Who Speaks for Islam? What a Billion Muslims Really Think. In other words, there's hard data on this. The other really important thing to continue to point out is that the values that are inherent and deep in Islam, of mercy, of compassion, of service, of hospitality, are the values that are a part of every tradition. They're a part of America. They're a part of Egypt. They're a part of India. They're a part of Christianity and Judaism. I think what we need right now is a world in which we highlight these universal values, but create the space for people to articulate their unique Jewish, Muslim, Christian, etc. narrative towards those values. And then, maybe more most important of all, is how do we take action coming from these various backgrounds, applying these universal values so that we actually have more mercy, more hospitality, more service in the world?
There was an expression in Obama's speech of denouncing but understanding where the anger comes from, not just in Reverend Wright, but in the community, and even calling it sometimes, he called it bitterness, he called it sometimes biased, he called it sometimes not productive. Is there a similar thing that you deal with or that other American Muslims deal with in saying, well, I certainly don't support terrorism, but I understand the anger?
Brian, I think it's not dissimilar from what you said earlier. What you said earlier was, if what Americans know of Islam is 9/11, then you can understand where the anger comes from. Okay. And what Barack Obama said about Jeremiah Wright and a segment of the community he comes from is, if their experience of America is largely based on Jim Crow segregation, then you can have a sense of where that of their bitterness comes from. Similarly, if all the Muslim world knows about America is negative stuff, is violence and lewdness, then you have a sense of where some of their resentment comes from, which is precisely why we need to be building platforms where, as the Holy Quran says, people from different backgrounds can come to know one another. In other words, the answer here is expanding the realm of knowledge that people have of each other so that people's opinions of other people are not based on a narrow and skewed slice of information. And again, this is why I started the Interfaith Youth Corps, and this is why I wrote Acts of Faith, because I think we need an organization in the world that is creating the space to apply universal values and articulate unique narratives. And I think we need more stories in the world that articulate the arc of how people come to be who they are, reconciling their multiple identities, Muslim, American, Indian, etc., in a way that's mutually enriching and not mutually exclusive.
Eboo Patel, my guest on WNYC, his book Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. And Steve in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Steve.
Hi. I just would like to commend Mr. Patel for speaking out like this. We just don't hear enough of it. It's obvious. One of my concerns is that with the Muslim faith, where is a central voice? Where is the ability to actually explain what's going on with religion to us? It seems so secular and so hidden so often. And I just want to know if there is any sort of help that he's getting from other leaders in the Islam faith, and if he could speak on that.
Thanks for that question, Steve. I mean, one of America is blessed in many, many ways. And one of the ways that this country is blessed is that there is a large group of really remarkable American Muslim scholars. And in the tradition of Islam, similar to the tradition of Judaism and in some ways Christianity and Hinduism also, there is a deep regard for knowledge and scholarship. And our Muslim American scholars are towering figures. So Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf here in New York City is one of them. Sheikh Hamza Youssef and Imam Zaid Shaker out in the Bay Area are others. Professor Ingrid Mattson, who is the first female head of the Islamic Society of North America and who's just come out with a great book on the Quran, is another. And all of these figures, you know, thanks be to God, are very supportive of the Interfaith Youth Corps and of my book and of this kind of work. So it's sometimes striking to me that non-Muslim Americans haven't heard of Imam Faisal or Professor Mattson or Sheikh Hamza because they are such uniquely American and deeply Muslim figures who speak not only out of a Muslim tradition, but about a world where people from different backgrounds come to know one another.
Thank you. One of the other questions I have actually is, so with this movement that you're putting together right now, where are you located?
Right. The Interfaith Youth Corps is located in Chicago, but we're a global organization. We've had a presence on 6 continents, and our basic work in the world is to tell the story of interfaith cooperation in the kind of paradigm of talk religion respectfully, and then to train people to take their own interfaith action. So we come to your campus, to your religious community, to your city, and we do workshops on how people can start their own interfaith service projects. And if you go to ifyc.org, you'll see a lot of that. We coordinate a big global program called the Days of Interfaith Youth Service, taking place in late April. But we would love to hear from people who say, you know, come to our campus, come to our church, come to our synagogue. We'd love to be involved in interfaith service projects.
We continue in a minute with Eboo Patel, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our daily podcast now includes the whole show. It used to be one segment a day. Now it's the full 2 hours. Sign up for our free daily podcast at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein will be in about 10 minutes to help introduce a new political crowdsourcing or group journalism project that we're going to invite you to participate with us in, and it does pertain to the presidential race, so stay tuned for that coming up in about 10 minutes. But we continue with Eboo Patel, author of Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation, and among other things, we're looking at parallels between the challenges that he faces in his work and some of the concepts expressed by Barack Obama in his speech on race and politics yesterday. And Eboo, your work in the Interfaith Youth Corps aims to, and this is from your mission statement, build mutual respect and pluralism among young people from different religious traditions by empowering to work together to serve others, unquote. And I suspect you encourage people to speak freely about their political and religious views. And on that point, I want to play one more clip from Obama's speech yesterday and get your thoughts.
For the men and women of Reverend Wright's generation, the memories of humiliation and doubt and fear have not gone away, nor is the anger and the bitterness of those years. That anger may not get expressed in public, in front of white coworkers or white friends, but it does find voice in the barbershop or the beauty shop or around the kitchen table.
Those things, he says, that don't get expressed in front of white coworkers or white friends, but do find voice in the barbershop or around the kitchen table. Do you think there's a parallel in that for American Muslims?
You know, I want to go back to Senator Obama's book on this, which I read in the tradition of James Baldwin's writings. And frankly, I wrote my book using Senator Obama's first book, Dreams for My Father, and Baldwin's work as kind of an archetype.
Really?
Which is basically, how does somebody figure out their identity when they've had a series of really negative experiences because of their race or ethnicity or religion? And what I think is remarkable about the arc of Baldwin's work and the arc of Obama's work was the recognition of those searingly negative experiences, and then the recognition of, as Baldwin says, you know, if the black and the white in our country can come together and insist like lovers, then we can achieve our country and change the history of the world. And that's, you know, that's kind of the struggle in my book of a set of really negative experiences around race, ethnicity, and religion as a young person, and then finding the veins in America and the veins in Islam which helped me climb into a different place. I think that that's what Senator Obama is trying to get to in this speech, is saying there, those experiences that generation of African Americans, and frankly all generations of African Americans, including this one, experience about the absence of fairness and equality in America, that is one experience, but we have to be able to climb out of that and point to something different. I think that people from all backgrounds need to do that. I think that Senator Obama affirmed that in his speech. I think that that's what I try to do in Acts of Faith. And I think that that's the American story and the only future for this country and this planet.
And on those things that Muslims might be saying to each other but not feel comfortable saying to other Americans, is that an important line?
let me give you an example of what that might be. Something that, for example, frustrates the heck out of me is the whisper campaign around Barack Hussein Obama. You know, Senator Obama's middle name. And the fact that...
Listen to talk radio, they're hardly whispering it.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, people saying, is Barack Obama a closet Muslim? Look, the truth is, if you don't know Barack Obama is a Christian by now, after countless public prayers and countless, you know, speeches and two books about his Christian faith and his beautiful connection to that faith, you don't only live under a rock. You have dug a very deep hole, found the biggest rock possible, and put it over you. You are willfully, intentionally ignorant. And the truth is, the comments about Barack Hussein Obama are not about this candidate. They're about the role that Muslims should or should not play in America. This is Glenn Beck saying to Representative Keith Ellison, the first Muslim elected to Congress, "Sir, tell me you're not working with my enemies," on CNN. I mean, that's ridiculous. And I look at that, and I look at my 10-month-old Muslim son, and I think, is he not going to have a place in America? Is he not going to have as many opportunities as somebody from another faith? And the fact that that is only now becoming an open conversation, but it's something that, you know, festers inside some Muslims, not in a dangerous way, but just in a, are you kidding me, kind of way?
And the other side that people will present is, well, yeah, I get that, but I live in a country that is under some attack, where, you know, where there's this group, Al-Qaeda, that says that it has declared war on the United States in the name of Islam. And so should I not at least wonder, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, when I meet Muslims in this country, is it so wrong for that question to pop into my mind? That's what a lot of people will say.
Right. And what I would say is when you, an American, including myself, says, I love freedom, nobody wonders if that American is going to become Timothy McVeigh, who bombed the federal building in Oklahoma City 10 years ago, even though Timothy McVeigh proudly called himself a freedom fighter. America, when the Ku Klux Klan says it stands for American values, you don't believe them. When Al-Qaeda says it stands for Islam, we shouldn't believe them. And if we know nothing more about Islam than Al-Qaeda, then we live in shocking and dangerous ignorance, which we need to find a way to climb out of.
Steve in Woodmere, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. You know, the one thing that bothers me is this point where I have to learn to understand Islam. I don't need to understand it, and it's my choice not to want to learn about it, to know that there are many out there who are looking to kill us. There are terrorists out there creating havoc all around the world. I mean, I don't have to learn about Buddhism or any other religion to know that these things generally don't happen on a mass scale as they do with the Islam religion. But what I do want to know is, why aren't there more people out there who are from the Muslim faith that are challenging what these people are saying about the Quran, that the Quran says, oh, we have to kill the infidel. Oh, we have to kill the Jews. Nobody is coming out. He's saying it, but enough people are not saying it. We don't hear it because, like you said, when the gentleman asked you, well, how come something's not being done? And you said to him, hey, well, then you aren't listening to me. You're one of a very few that may be talking, but nobody is saying it. Nobody is condemning you know, the people out there, the imams that are out there that are causing the rioting, such as when they made that cartoon about Muhammad. Of course we know it wasn't right to do that.
So Ibu, again, and Steve, let me get you an answer. You hear the right. Representative of a widespread perception that not a lot of voices are speaking the way you do.
Right. So, Steve, I appreciate you coming on the air very much. And let me just give you kind of two facts about this. One is there's something online called Not in the Name of Islam, and you can Google that. And there are 700,000 so Muslims who have signed this petition that says the acts of violence that have taken place by crazy radicals are not done in the name of my religion. I absolutely distance myself from them. So that's, you know, 700,000 is a lot of people who found a petition online and said, I really want to put my name to this. Okay, so not in the name of Islam. And the second is an important new book has come out, which I've mentioned a couple times, Who Speaks for Islam by Dalia Mogahed and John Esposito. And in their data at the Gallup Center, they found that 93% of Muslims condemn and disagree with terrorism and the acts of September 11th.
That's a global survey?
That's a global survey. 93% condemn and disagree with it. That's a really important figure to know about, right? So I just wanted to kind of – factually speaking, there are many, 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 many Muslims who are proactively speaking out against this. But I also, Steve, want to comment on your sense of, you know, you don't need to know about Islam. I mean, I suppose, you know, that part of freedom is the freedom of not wanting to know about something. I do want to point out, America is the most religiously diverse nation in human history. There are more people from more religions living close together in this country than in any other nation ever. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to come to know one another. I think that, in fact, it's part of the American story to do exactly that. James Madison, one of our founding fathers, famously said that freedom of religion in America, which is a value we all cherish, is actually based on the diversity of religions in America. This is in the 18th century. I think that religious diversity is a huge part of the American story, and I think we need to be building that religious diversity, appreciating it, and the way to start is by talking religion respectfully with a base of appreciative knowledge. And if you want to know more, check out ifyc.org.
Steve, thank you for your call. There's a comment on our website that says, more have been killed in the name of religion than any other cause. Catholics, Protestants, Muslims, Jews, all have been slaughtered because of their beliefs and have slaughtered in the name of their belief. Doesn't your guest think it's time to abandon the God model? And you wrote, Ibu, a recent blog entry about this very type of argument that, quote, the sad truth is that the categorical demonization of religious groups is simply par for the course. And you went on to say that if you insult race or ethnicity in this day and age, you're treated like a pariah. If you insult religion, you are nominated for a National Book Award, as Christopher Hitchens was. So what worries you about the stridently secular talk of people like Hitchens and that comment page poster?
You know, nothing. Things don't worry me about secularism per se, and people have the freedom to believe in God or not believe in God, to be observant or not observant. That's perfectly fine. What I am concerned about is attacking a group of people based on one of their identities, and we would never and we should never do that around. To black people or to Indian people or to women or to people from any other identity, but we do it freely around religion.
The difference is being black or Indian or female is not something you choose. Religion is.
I don't think that that's actually true. I think I consider these all identities that are part of our inheritance. And I mean, there are great stories about people who, light-skinned African Americans, for example, who quote-unquote chose to be black or chose to be white. I actually think that we have complex relationships with our inherited identities. And I don't feel like I necessarily choose to be Muslim. I feel like it's a responsibility that I care that I carry from my past and living up to a truth that I think is out there. And I think aggressive discrimination against groups based on any of their identities is simply wrong, and it's un-American. The other thing is, I mean, the fact is 80 to 90% of the world is religious. Demographers say that 80% of the world at least is going to be religious probably for the next couple of centuries. Are we really going to throw them all into the heap of potentially violent people, or are we going to take the enormous energy that is religion in the world and help encourage it in a positive direction?
Ibu Patel, his book is called Acts of Faith: The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. He's the executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps, a Chicago-based organization that looks to foster dialogue between young people of all religions. Great dialogue here. Thank you very much. Let's do it again.
I look forward to it, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will introduce a new WNYC crowdsourcing or group journalism project pertinent to the presidential race. And then we will look at a surprising gap in John McCain's knowledge that he revealed yesterday in the Middle East about the relationship between Iraq, Iran, and Al-Qaeda. Stay with us.